Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
High above the milkpacking district, in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
Two are dead in a tigered murder-suicide. Grizzlies at the WSU Center maul a 2-year-old bear, and a man is rescued after breaking his leg on an elk hunt.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, September 1st, 2010. A man and a woman in their 20s were found dead at a tigered apartment complex. A 2-year-old girl was sleeping inside and was not hurt. Neighbors at the Arbor Heights apartments called police just after 8:30 p.m. last night after hearing screaming, then 4 to 5 gunshots. The couple was reportedly arguing before the shots were fired.
4 to 5 gunshots? Like the kind with extra vitamins?
Yes.
Okay.
Four to five. All right. Police found the two bodies.
If there were gunshots next door, how would there be four? First of all, 4 to 5 indicates it's just another blatant misuse of four or five. Yeah, that's just another misuse of the English language. You know, you would think if there were gunshots happening next door, you would either have no idea how many there were, or you would know exactly how many there were.
Well, what probably happened is one neighbor said 4 and another neighbor said 5.
All right.
Because some people can't count.
I suppose that is true. Here's Don Taylor.
Police found the two bodies in the breezeway of the apartment. The identities of those involved were not immediately released. Police are investigating the incident as a murder-suicide.
What is a breezeway?
I was about to ask you the same way.
I don't live in Tigard. I'm not upper crust.
Is that foyer?
Yeah.
Or foyer?
I don't believe, because wouldn't they just say the entryway or the foyer?
I don't know what a breezeway is.
Let me ask you this. I have a question for you.
Okay.
Is foyer a fake pronunciation that people put on things? Is that like saying tarjay?
I think it's like saying forte. I think it's a mispronunciation. Like the real pronunciation is fort, but people say that's my forte because it sounds...
Right.
But so I think it's actually foyer. But people say foyer.
But in other words, it's not like a French word or something that we're just pronouncing phonetically because we're retarded.
I'm not sure.
All right. We have to put it on the long list of things that don't make any sense to me.
So I've been told by a couple of people in the text box that the breezeway is that uncovered walkway along the front of the building, but they did say...
Is it an apartment building?
In the breezeway of the apartment, so...
It's an apartment complex. So maybe it's sort of like an outer area that is sort of like a hallway that is exposed to the outside.
I believe so.
All right.
Hence calling it a breezeway because there's a breeze. I've also been told that foyer is a French word. So.
Yeah, see, that's one of those things where you can never really tell if it's just a thing that we are mangling here in America because that's kind of what we do. Or if that's a thing that people are retroactively putting some fake foreign pronunciation onto under the misguided apprehension that it will make them sound intelligent. It does not.
No. A 2-year-old grizzly bear was mauled to death by 2 older bears at the Washington State University Bear Center in Pullman, Washington. The university says the fight Tuesday was the first time the bears had shown violent aggression. Center Director Charles Robbins said it doesn't put bears together unless they show months or years of good behavior with each other. The Moscow Pullman Daily News reports that 3 bears had been raised in side-by-side pens for at least 2 years and were out together in a 2-acre fenced area with 2 other resident bears. The WSU Bear Center houses adult grizzlies for research. The Broadway Bridge will partially reopen Saturday after months of closures due to streetcar track construction. The bridge will reopen with one traffic lane in each direction. The south sidewalk will be open to pedestrians and bicycles, and the north sidewalk will be expected to reopen September 17th.
Wait, so the Broadway Bridge, so is it all the way closed now?
Right now,
has it been all the way closed?
Yes.
All right. See, this is one of those things that the bridge has been apparently then inaccessible, but I haven't really noticed because I just sort of assume it's clogged with traffic all the time, and so I haven't even tried to take it. It's like the Burnside Bridge. Now, at a certain point, I just decided I was never, ever, ever going to take the Burnside Bridge if I could avoid it because it's always packed just from miles in every direction. And there always seems to be something either being torn out or reinstalled. And I just sort of, my default setting is to assume that it's like my last choice. If every other bridge in the world is closed, then I might consider taking it. But that's only like after midnight or something, because otherwise it's just congested like nobody's business.
Yeah, no, they've been working on that streetcar project that no one actually wants, that costs a fortune, but will make us more Vera Katzian and European-looking with our streetcars and
such. Part of the march of democracy, Don.
Yeah. Linn County Sheriff's deputies have rescued a Portland man who broke his leg while elk hunting in the mountains east of Sweet Home. Deputies said Tuesday that 56-year-old Jim Sloan was hunting Monday with 40-year-old Wendy Wente of Hillsboro in the Gate Creek area when Sloan fell and broke his leg. Wente hiked 45 minutes to get cell service and called 911. A dozen Linn County Sheriff's search and rescue team members responded along with four deputies and members of the Sisters Camp Sherman Fire District, Black Butte Fire, and the Camp Sherman Hasty Team. Fire crews reached Sloan first and stabilized his leg before Linn County personnel transported him using a rescue system involving ropes and a litter to help raise and lower the victim over the nearly vertical terrain.
The Hasty Team?
The Camp Sherman Hasty Team.
Really? That's sort of cute, actually.
Yeah.
It's like having a rapid response team or a quick response team, but instead they're sort of British, and there's sort of a jocular kind of speed with which they do everything.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're not like fully prepared.
No.
Either.
No, like it's sort of a slapdash. But really enthusiastic kind of group.
They get there quick.
Yeah.
But then they forget some of their stuff.
Uh-oh, forgot my ropes. Better go back.
As we wait for the dust to settle from the current economic crisis, Americans are finding new ways to make do with less. I'm sorry, I just noticed a typo that made me laugh.
Okay.
Some are willing to call it the new norm. Amanda Gengler with Money Magazine explains why we're seeing more men take a hit on the job front than
Gengler
women.
Gengler is a really... A Gengler sounds like a thing you have to go and you have to have the doctor, but specifically a dermatologist, removed from your body. You know what I mean? Because you find it embarrassing when you're in bed.
I had a Gengler on my foot and I had to have it burned off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or I was just thinking some sort of a skin fold like protrusion on the inside of your mouth.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you get on your back if you're like really fat.
Yeah.
And the weight problem is causing you to grow this Gengler just above your waist.
All right. And the thing is, I can picture what it would look like, too. I mean, I have an absolute idea of what a Gengler actually, how it sort of appears. I will not describe that now for the sake of decorum. I'm sorry.
But it winks at you.
Please don't say that. This is, which cut is this? This is women number one?
Women, yes, right. Women number one.
And women tend to be in things like healthcare and education and just industries that haven't been hit as hard.
By the way, women tends to be, apparently, in those industries, according to, is it Amanda?
Amanda Gengler.
The thing is, I couldn't even really remember what her first name was, but Amanda Gengler, Amanda's the perfect first name to go with that last name.
Oh, if only I had Amanda Gengler.
Yes.
Gengler? Never mind.
Move on.
Gengler says some are calling it the new norm.
No one's calling it the new norm.
Going into the recession, the unemployment rates for both genders were...
I instinctively dislike this woman.
Yeah.
She hasn't done anything to me. It's not like she's ever wronged me or my family or anybody I know or care about.
Yeah. She's that woman that everyone who works at Starbucks hates as soon as she walks in the door. Like, oh, God, it's Amanda Gengler.
Going into the recession, the unemployment rates for both genders were about equal. And today, for men, the rates... approaching 10%. For women, it's approaching 8%. So there's just a lot of dynamics that are changing as that power changes.
My latte isn't hot enough. I almost spilled it on the seat of my Lexus. I'm unhappy.
Well, you know, if you were covered with growths all over your back, you'd probably be cranky, too.
Gangler says we're also seeing a shift in who is bringing home more money to the family household.
About a third of women today are actually earning more than their husbands. And this is a trend that has been gradually growing for a while, but the recession has definitely exacerbated it because men have been harder hit than women.
I speak everything out of the back of my throat. I have a weird case of glottal fry when I talk.
I don't even know what she's talking about. I just want to punch her in the face.
It's just like listening to a really shrill, annoying minor bird in a pet store that the owner can't quite stifle the way he wants to. Realize that somewhere in this sad world of ours, there is a man who is probably married to Amanda Gangler and who wakes up every day and just drinks a bottle of Stetson before he can even make it out of the bathroom. It's like all he can, you know, as somebody once said, you just have to... never mind. I was gonna plunge on ahead with my ruminations on my supposed that Amanda Gangler's ostensible home life, but I.
Honey, we're out of coffee. And he just like wishes he was dead. He just longs for death.
And he just sits there at the table, just shoving cornflakes in his mouth, and going, "I'm gonna put your head in a camera bag one of these days. I swear to Christ." All right.
California.
That's just my artist's rendition. That's my rendering of the Gangler home life. I don't know that that's actually true. That may not be completely accurate.
California lawmakers have rejected a bill seeking to ban plastic shopping bags after a contentious debate over whether the state is going too far in trying to regulate personal choice. The Democratic bill, which failed late Tuesday, would have been the first statewide ban, although a few California cities already prohibit their use. The measure offered California an opportunity to emerge at the forefront of a global trend, said Senator Gil Cedillo.
Okay, first of all, you can't emerge at the forefront of a global trend. A trend indicates that something is already happening or taking place. If you're at the forefront of it, it's not a trend. You're doing something, and then everybody else follows you.
Unless this global trend has been in a dark cave, and California just sort of jostles everyone aside so they're in the front as they come out into the sunshine, then you could emerge at the forefront of a global trend.
Maybe Amanda Gangler has something to say about it.
Going into the recession, the unemployment rates for both genders were about equal. And today, for men, the rate's approaching 10%. For women, it's approaching 8%.
The thing is, if you just like put her quotes in a lineup and ask me to recite any of the things that she said in those three sound bites, I don't think I could tell you any of it because her voice is like hearing someone scrape the side of a house with a clamshell.
And in my mind, she looks exactly like Harmony from Buffy.
I could totally see that.
Discouraging plastic bag use through fees and bans first gained traction outside of the U.S. in nations such as South Africa, Ireland, China, and Bangladesh. In January, Washington, D.C. implemented a 5-cent surcharge on disposable paper and plastic bags. A handful of California cities already banned single-use plastic bags after San Francisco became the first to do so in 2007.
Really, if San Francisco is the first to do something and the only other country of note on the list is China, I think that's like de facto indication that we don't need to do whatever it is, that it's a useless and stupid and possibly lead-filled idea.
Well, Palo Alto, Malibu, and Fairfax in Marin County have followed. While a ban approved in Manhattan Beach, California, is tied up in litigation. Manhattan Beach, by the way, my hometown.
Really?
Yes.
All right. So the place where you were born and the place where George Lucas lives are they're the towns that have embraced this enthusiastically.
Exactly.
All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. PDX.FM. And don't forget, you can also get this on your mobile device as well if you would like to listen on the go. You can do that at mobile.PDX.FM. You can also find this program in archived form at iTunes and right here at PDX.FM as well as LegionofNews.com. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson radio program is coming up at 1 o'clock. This, however, is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
I have breaking news here.
Should I get my breaking news sounder?
Yes.
Hold on a second. This is breaking news from Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
This was sent to me by Cheryl Kanakoa. I don't know if it's actually breaking, but I didn't see it before. James Lee, the man suspected of taking a hostage at the Discovery Channel headquarters, is apparently holding at least one hostage in their building in Silver Spring, Maryland. He is an environmental protester who's been publishing criticisms of the network, according to a senior law enforcement official close to the investigation. Scott Graham of the Montgomery County, Maryland Fire Department said that they could confirm that he is armed and he does have some sort of package with him. Asked if that means Lee has a bomb, Graham said he could not say. Police remain in contact with him. He said there have been unconfirmed reports of a shot fired, but there have been no reports of injuries. It would be premature to speculate on any exact causes as to why this is occurring. So to repeat, a man named James Lee, an environmental protester, is apparently holding at least one hostage at the Discovery Channel headquarters in Maryland, and is armed and has a package of some sort.
Okay, and so, but they don't think he's killed anybody as such. I mean, I'm not saying it's like a great situation, but it's not like he's... So it's one guy, and they say that there's a shot fired, they think?
Yes.
All right, and he's got some sort of package with him.
Yes.
All right, well, there you go. So more information on that as it happens. This is Don Taylor.
Sheriff's deputies are asking the public for help in solving an attempted murder in Wilsonville. Clackamas County deputies said Donald Donnie Barham was confronted by a gunman in his living room after arriving home at about 12:30 p.m. on August 3rd. The intruder demanded money and food. Although Barham complied with the man's orders, he was shot in the head, according to the sheriff's office. The gunman then stole Barham's Toyota Tacoma pickup truck, which was later found crashed in front of a home in rural Malala. Barham was found the next morning by a friend after he failed to report for his work shift.
Is it really necessary to note that something is in rural Malala, as opposed to the bustling metropolis of downtown Malala, where life is fast and there's concrete under your feet and bright lights overhead after dark?
The urban city center of Malala.
The inner city sprawl of Malala, packed, teeming with humanity.
I got out of the truck and I stuck my head in the window and I yelled, "Donnie," and he answered me, said Rick Asquith, who works with Barham at Wilsonville Lanes. Asquith estimates that Barham laid on the floor for 17 hours before being found. Barham was taken to a hospital and underwent surgery. He survived and is now recovering. "He's a great guy," Asquith said. "He's been a great friend and a good employee, and people just love him here." Deputies described the intruder as white, 35 to 45 years old, 5'11" to 6'1" tall, with an average build.
Okay.
So he's an average built,
seriously,
slightly tall white guy.
The next time the cops put out some description where they just say that he's like an average looking white guy, I'm just going to start going out and just corralling every white guy I see and demanding that they lay down on the ground until the cops arrive. I'm just going to walk down the street just doing a citizen's arrest of every average looking white man that I find.
Well, if you know an average looking white guy who may have shot someone in the head in Wilsonville, there's a reward of up to $1,000 for information that leads to an arrest.
You know what somebody should do? Somebody should totally go and arrest the average white band for a crime at some point.
For every crime.
But it's sort of like an Emily Letella, kind of a mistake. "I was told the police were looking for an average white band." It's funny in my head. It doesn't really matter if it's funny to anybody else, I suppose. You are listening to Legion of News right here at legionofnews.com, which is heard right here at pdx.fm, and in turn on your mobile device at mobile.pdx.fm, brought to you by fine folks such as Castalia Language Center, who, by the way, we were actually checking in with those guys yesterday, just sort of, you know, our weekly check-in with, that we do with our clients and our business partners to make sure that all is wonderful in their lives. And I think it was yesterday afternoon that we'd noted that there'd been something like 17 spots in a row we'd done that had it all been preceded by some awkward story about, you know, like a guy in Mexico who's melting down bodies into a stew of some kind or, you know, whatever. And so there's a little email chain that went by trying to, you know, make sure that everything was copacetic in the world of our sponsors, including Castalia Language Center. And they were, in fact, they were just over the moon about how everything sounded. So they either are legitimately happy with the juxtaposition that their commercials have been given, or they just haven't been listening and they're trying to spare our feelings. So, you know, I'll take it either way. It doesn't really matter. Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults, and they're classes that are limited to no more than 8 students. So it's a comfortable, relaxed environment. It means you're going to be there with people who are also there to learn. And I'm not saying you can't, get some sort of a language education while you're in high school, for example. But if you're in a class of 35 people, half of whom are taking it because they just need the language credit, 20%. Of whom are probably stoned on paint thinner at any given moment. Maybe not the best learning environment. So if you go to Castalia Language Center, you can find out more about it, by the way, at portlandspanish.com. That is portlandspanish.com. The teachers are professional, but it's a relaxed and a friendly, comfortable environment. Everybody's learning in the same way and at the same speed, and with a class size that is no more than 8 people, you're going to make sure that everybody sort of comes along at the same route, and you're going to learn Spanish that you can actually use in real-life situations. So you go to portlandspanish.com to find out more about Castalia Language Center. This is Don Taylor.
A Beaverton man called 911 to tell police he needed a towel and a hug Saturday morning, but instead he found himself arrested on criminal trespassing charges. Police officers said they found Mark Eskelson in a private hot tub at the Four Seasons Rec Center at about 7 a.m. Saturday.
"I need a small Filipino boy. Stat!"
Neighbors had complained about noise in the area, but police said Eskelson called emergency dispatchers himself and claimed to be the Washington County Sheriff. "Believe it or not, I am the sheriff of Washington County, and I've been in this hot tub here, I don't know, at least 10 hours, Eskelson said in the 911 call. Eskelson said he was cold from being in the pool. He asked police to bring him a towel, a hot chocolate with little marshmallows, and also said he needed a hug. Prior to making his emergency call, Eskelson climbed the locked fence to get into the pool area. When a dispatcher asked if he was experiencing a medical emergency, he mentioned an operation he had 4 months ago. Dispatcher, what's going on with you medically? He said, medically? I've been yelling for like an hour and had a double hernia operation in May. I'm not supposed to be yelling real loud.
This story doesn't make any sense, but it's the best story we've had all week.
During the 9-minute emergency call, Eskelson later admitted that he was not the sheriff of Washington County. He said he simply needed help. I need a hug, you know, and a warm cup of hot chocolate with some marshmallows in it. Officers said Eskelson admitted to using drugs daily. They said they found marijuana and a pipe in his backpack. Eskelson also said he had a needle and syringe. Eskelson was arrested on charges of criminal trespassing and improper use of 911.
But it's not like if he'd been smoking pot or something, that would explain this behavior. He seems probably like a...
He looks like DJ Squalls.
Bit of a... Wow. Wow. Does it look like a...
Okay, you know the actor I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's Qualls.
Qualls.
He's sort of a gangly, skinny-looking guy. He was the guy in Hustle and Flow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, look at this face and then just sort of a, it tricks us. That's exactly what this is. He's just, you know.
He does look like he needs a hug, though.
He really does. And, I mean, who hasn't felt the urge to pick up the phone and just, you know, and just try to see if you could rustle yourself up a hug or some hot chocolate? And I like the idea that he specifies little marshmallows.
Little marshmallows.
Not big marshmallows. But he hadn't committed. I mean, he had done like not even breaking and entering. He just climbed into somebody's hot tub that wasn't his.
He entered. He trespassed.
So it wasn't like he was a hardcore criminal in any way.
No.
When you first started this story, though, when you said that a man called 911 and said he needed a hug and a hot chocolate, I really was just expecting for it to end with like a tasing and a beating, just because that's the furthest thing from hug and a hot chocolate. You know, no, I wanted a hug and a, you know, and. Just, you know, that's sort of, this seems to be the default setting of the cops, and for reasons, I suppose, that make a lot of sense. But I, you know, that just sort of seems to be the way that the life works out for almost all of us. You wake up, you're looking for hot chocolate, and you end up in an interrogation room just being sodomized. You know, theoretically. All right.
More or less.
Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Science is on the march right here via Legion of News at PDX.FM. Are you okay? You looked like you bit your tongue just there.
Bit.
All right.
Well, I drank a Vizo, and I'm drinking the sour cherry grapefruit Vizo. And so sometimes it kind of
grit.
Makes my mouth a little puckery.
Well, because you get the tartness.
Yes.
Sort of, you get that weird sort of a squinching that happens inside your mouth.
Yes. That is the technical term for it, I believe, is squinching.
A gangling that
now,
happens.
Now that we're in the science news, I think it's important that we use these precise terms.
Here's Don Taylor.
Clark County commissioners are considering plans to build Southwest Washington's first ever biomass plant in downtown Vancouver, just west of the jail. It's part of their goal to be more sustainable and use more renewable energy. The county owns the land and says the facility's close proximity to surrounding county buildings would allow its steam to be piped directly to them.
Biomass is sort of a quasi-scientific term in that I don't think it actually means anything.
No.
I think those are two words, bio and mass, that individually have some sort of meaning. You put them together and no one knows what the hell you're talking about. And then everybody makes a Pauly Shore joke and we all go home.
County Commissioner Steve Stewart said, we're looking at a biomass generation facility that could save taxpayers over $100,000 a year in energy costs for county facilities.
A biomass is just, that just means a clump of stuff. That means nothing. That doesn't mean anything. That's like when you go to your doctor and he says, well, what we've got, if you can see here, we've got a little bit of a shadowing on this x-ray. And, Ms. Taylor, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to cut you open because there's a mass of some kind. And a mass, when your doctor tells you, for example, you have a mass, that means he don't know what the hell it is. Could be a tumor. Maybe you swallowed a softball. He doesn't know. Maybe you're just full of socks. He has no idea what it is. A mass means they have no idea what they're talking about. So a biomass in this story, that is a reporter, I think, and or a county official who's just bluffing their way through this because they don't really understand what it does.
Well, I believe what it means is it's biological material that is burnt.
Everything is biological material.
Are
you a biomass?
We've had this discussion before, but
I'm going to refer to you as biomass Don Taylor from now on.
It's material from living or recently living organisms, and then it is used like wood waste, hydrogen, alcohol fuels,
paper,
and so it could, and like it's used to, you know.
My legal pad is a biomass.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you threw it into a biomass plant, it would be burnt up and turned into steam, which would be used for energy.
So this is just a big, it's a big fire, basically.
Yeah, it's like, it's basically think of how they generate electricity using coal.
Right.
Except now you're using big piles
of coal is biomass.
Of burnable garbage.
Yeah, coal is biomass, though, is it not?
Probably. Uh-huh. I guess technically, if you want to say that. Anyway, I imagine it probably smells really bad. But it's Vancouver, so, you know, they already got Camus right next door. Well, so they probably don't care.
Well, Jesus, everything in the Northwest either smells like rotting fish or pulping paper somewhere. So, I mean, it doesn't, you know, or if you live anywhere near the Willamette, it just, it just smells like last night's dinner.
Oh, yeah, and the Southwest Washington Clean Air Agency says that sometimes you'll be able to see black smoke coming out of it.
That's great.
Because that's something we really need, too.
That's wonderful. I think that means that they kill a pope every time they turn it on.
Apple Incorporated is hosting a music-themed event today that is likely to yield updated iPods, although the company will not confirm any details. Apple watchers also speculate that the company could show off a new version of its Apple TV set-top box or add more music discovery features to its iTunes music software. Apple sent an email invitation to members of the media last week with a photo of a guitar and has unveiled new iPods at similarly timed events in 2008 and 2009. This time around, analysts are looking for Apple to update its iPod Touch, a device similar to the iPhone without the phone or camera capabilities. The gadget may get a new higher resolution screen, like the recently launched iPhone 4, a faster processor and two cameras, one on the back for taking photos and video and another in the front for video chat. They may also be rethinking the design of their smaller iPod Nano, according to an analyst. So we'll find out about that later.
The Apple, and please don't email me about this or feel like you have to give me any information about this at all. But the Apple TV is one of those things that you see sitting in the Apple store and you don't really know what it does, but then you realize you just don't care and you move along. It's like everything else in the Apple store that you don't need. Sometimes they will roll out these products, much as Apple really does have a handle on their marketing, their positioning. Occasionally they'll launch these things that just don't seem to make any sense, where it's just, you know, it's just sort of like an ivory white box. And you stare at it, and it's got the Apple logo in the front, and then it just sort of glows gently like a light just kind of goes on the front. And you go, what is that? And the guy says, well, it's the eye gangler. Now, I just want to say gangler is... an eye gangler really sounds like some sort of an inspection device that they would jam into you at the optometrist.
Well, what is the thing for cables? Is a dongle? Is
yes,
that the
a
word?
Dongle.
Which that just sounds like a made up word, and it also sounds dirty.
It is it sounds dirty or like some sort of schoolyard euphemism for like maybe part of your solid waste. By the way, Don Taylor, I will show you my dongle in just a moment because there's actually one of those I have to lug around with me or something. But you go to the Apple store the Apple TV is like this, where you go, what is it? And they go, Apple TV. And you go, what does it do? And they go, and they give you the long explanation. And at the end of it, you realize you have no idea what the product actually does. But no matter when you go to the Apple store, there are always people just sort of hovering around it like moths around your porch light.
I told you I'd watched this documentary about design called Objectified by the guy who did Helvetica. And it's really good. And one of the guys they talk to in that is the that crazy VP of design guy at Apple.
Right.
I know you know who I'm talking about because you've seen him on things. And he's like taking apart like a MacBook Air and showing you how like you take the top part off and the metal thing that all the keys stick into is just one piece.
Yeah.
And how hard they work to make it just one piece. And one of these things he's really proud of that he shows off is how when the MacBook is closed and there's a light on the side that shows you that it's like on or off. And when it's off, it disappears. They made sure to put it behind like a sheer piece of plastic so that you don't always have a visible light there. It's like if the light is on, you see it. If it's off, it's just vanished.
Yeah, well,
and he said something about like, you have no idea how hard we work to do this. It's because I believe that if something is not functioning, you shouldn't have to look at it.
Well, that's like the thing. Well, that's the thing with this, with my MacBook. This is like the unibody aluminum, whatever. This is Apple in a nutshell, and this is what is both great and absurd about Apple. You know, the first The first Macs that rolled off, you know, the first line of Macintosh computers that came out in 1984, if you were to open those up, which I don't think you actually could, I think even then Apple was very much in the whole, like, mustn't, don't, no, you know, that you were, you know, like, you couldn't really get the things apart because they didn't want you to modify it or screw with it. But the first line of Macintoshes that rolled out in 84, if you had opened them up, like the case, and pried it apart and looked inside, you actually would have seen the signatures of the guys who designed it inside, because Steve Jobs had this whole thing about, because these aren't just computers, these are pieces of art, which I suppose you could make the case that that is true, but it's also one of those things that only Steve Jobs or Apple would actually say. You know, like, you would never hear Steve Ballmer saying that. I mean, he'd be busy cracking a chair over some guy's head in the applications division. By the way, here's a dongle. This right here. And dongle, by the way, that is just code for, we did, this is from my my non-iPod MP3 player, my Creative Zen. This is, a dongle just means we completely screwed up when we created the product, and we realized that we don't actually have the capability to plug it into anything, so we had to then create this separate part whose sole purpose is to be lost. That is the only reason. What's this? Well, this is a thing you can lose, sir. And then you can buy it for $19 from creative.com. Isn't that great? Splendid. I'll put it into the box. That's really, you know, that is the only function. The only function is to make my day difficult by vanishing right when I need it. Because without this, the thing just becomes, you know, basically like a deck of cards that sits there on the table and doesn't do anything. Here's Don Taylor, kids.
I believe that's enough science news for me.
All right, there you go. There's never enough science news, but there are other things to get to.
Well, I have a thing about bonobo apes, but I'll do that one tomorrow.
About what apes?
Bonobo.
I don't even know what that is.
They're a type of ape.
Okay. I guess I could have figured that out. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A 20-year-old Salem man and his 46-year-old girlfriend were arrested Tuesday after the man's parents were found murdered in their Dallas-area home. Polk County Sheriff's deputies said they found the bodies of 61-year-old David Scott Jondal and his 58-year-old wife, Marilyn Ruth Jondal, in their home on Gilliam Road. They ran the Abundant Life Farm near Dallas. Detectives said they did not know the cause of death, but it appeared both victims had suffered trauma. Police from several area agencies and Oregon State Troopers went to the apartment of the Jondal's son in Salem around 11:30 p.m., where they arrested Andrew Jondal and his girlfriend, Cindy Lou Beck. Andrew Jondal was charged with aggravated murder and Beck for hindering prosecution.
Cindy Lou Beck, you quit hindering that prosecution right now. You get inside.
He was held without bail as detectives continued to investigate. According to the website of the family's business, David worked as a software engineer with aerospace companies for several years while Marilyn homeschooled their three sons.
Yeah, that's surprising.
The family decided to start their own farm in 2000. The most interesting part of the story to me is when the first line, a 20-year-old Salem man and his 46-year-old girlfriend.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there was a picture of the girlfriend and or the son, but it's like even without it, I can sort of imagine what they look like. I have no difficulty conjuring up that mental image.
Authorities seized more than $200,000 worth of marijuana plants from a home in northeast Vancouver Tuesday morning. Deputies responded to the home on Northeast 89th Circle about 3:30 p.m. on reports of a disturbance between two people and discovered the part of the home had been converted into a marijuana growing operation. Members of the Clark-Skamania County Intra-Agency Drug Task Force returned about 10 a.m. with a search warrant and confiscated about 140 plants. The pot has an estimated street value of $210,000. Which, of course, is ridiculously inflated,
because it always is.
Seriously, $210,000?
Wait, are you saying...
How do they estimate that?
Hold on, when you say it's ridiculously inflated, are you saying that the story is giving a false representation of the value, or are you complaining about it like from a consumer point of view? Well, like, well, that's just ridiculous. I'm not going to pay more than 90.
Well, I don't know how much the marijuana goes for, honestly, because
how much did it go for when you were a youth, Don?
Oh, I don't even want to say, because then you'll know how ridiculously
old I am. We'll be able to carbon date you somehow
by using that.
All right.
But the thing is, like, I've made no secret of the fact that I have enjoyed certain stimulants in my past, many years ago in my youth, and I knew how much that cost. I knew how much it cost. And so when there would be like some giant cocaine bust and they would tell you how much they got and what the street value was, and you try to do the math in your head and you'd go, no, it's not worth that much.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you a question about buying drugs, Don.
Okay.
This may sound daft, but... Do you get like a bulk discount if you're just some guy? In other words, if I were to go and buy some tiny little vial of cocaine somewhere, mm-hmm. and then if I were to go back the next day and if I were to buy like five times that, Is it five times the price, or is it like four times the price? Do they offer something like the more you buy, the more you save?
It costs less the more you buy.
Really?
Yes.
So it's almost like you can't afford not to buy more. It's really,
yeah.
It's a... Okay.
So if you buy like, you know, basically with the cocaine back in my day, and once again, I will stress to anyone listening, this was some time ago. I do not use these things now.
When you and Mick were dancing beneath the mechanized moon at Studio 54?
Exactly. When Liza and Isaac Mizrahi and I were staying up till dawn... at the factory. It would be like anything up to a gram was a certain cost. You know, there was the cost of a gram, half a gram, quarter gram was all pretty basic. But then if you went up to an 8-ball, say, which was an eighth of an ounce,
yes,
it was less expensive. And then if you get an ounce, of course, it's less expensive still. So, yes, the more you buy, the less it actually costs you. So I've always thought that when they go street value, they're just... going to the highest possible price because it makes them those in law enforcement look much more impressive.
Yeah, because then it looks like you've taken more money out of the pockets of drug dealers.
Because divide $210,000 by 140, and that would be what they're saying the individual price of value of each of these plants is.
Are you actually asking me to do it?
Sure.
All right, hold on a second.
Because that's just a ridiculous amount of money.
Hold on. So what am I dividing by what?
$210,000.
Yes, we are now doing math on the air. That is now what passes for entertainment here. $210,000, okay, divided by?
140.
Hold on a second. My interactive swine flu map is getting in the way. 1 second. All right, divided by 140. All right. 140 equals 1,500.
So I don't know. But yes, do you think one marijuana plant is actually worth $1,500? That's what they're saying.
I have no idea. I guess a marijuana plant though could be worth that much because it's an ongoing thing, right? In other words, it's not like a bag of marijuana where it's like that's all there is. You get a marijuana plant. You could sell a plant because it's a self-replicating thing because it's that is teaching someone how to fish if you give them the marijuana plant. Here's the thing I wonder about, actually. So I was driving along. Where the hell was I yesterday? Driving along somewhere in our fair city. Oh, I was coming back from the DMV place, and I was passing. And it's just a thing you never would have seen like 10 years ago, maybe unless you lived in LA, where this sort of thing always happens first. But I was driving by this doctor's office, and there was a huge like orange and yellow and green sign out front, and it looked for all the world like it was just like a Peter Tosh fan club or something, and it just said medical marijuana, you know, prescriptions, you know, blah blah blah, MD, and he was clearly like an actual doctor, but it was like if you read the weekly alternative papers in LA where it's it's like the medical marijuana ads where like you can come in and get like an actual real physician's medical marijuana prescription card, but the ads are all like swirly and psychedelic and everything is like filled with peace signs, and the doctor's there with sunglasses and he's got a big like blissed out smile on his face and there's like a sitar and
the implication being then you possibly don't necessarily have to have anything really wrong with you
or that you
to
have,
get him to write you a prescription
or that like the first guy I ever knew who had a medical marijuana card he suffered from stress and then he would always follow up by going because I'm stressed out I can't get my weed do you know what I'm saying hey you know and you go okay
and then
whatever.
You'd punch him
but you know, what I wonder about with that is, like, is that a thing where you could just, like, if you had, well, I'm going to write this down. I'm going to ask this next hour because I have a question about this. My question about the growing of the pot, though, these guys, the $210,000 worth, what I don't understand from their perspective, the criminal perspective, is if you were going to grow, let's say it is $200,000 worth of marijuana, well, first of all, you got to know if the man catches you, he's going to F you, but good. I mean, the DEA doesn't screw around. I mean, they're going to screw you hard. Especially because they know that the long, inexorable march toward legalization is underway, so they're going to screw while the screwing is good. So they're going to shaft you if they find you with that. If you were willing to risk that, why would you not then risk it by growing something or selling something that had a higher profit margin? You know what I mean? It's not like if you have $200,000 worth of pot plants, you get to just walk away if they bust you. They're going to stick you in prison. So if they're going to stick you in prison, why would you not just skip to the bottom of the page and be selling heroin, which it seems like has a much higher profit margin to it, and you can make a lot more money?
As far as what they say as the street values and stuff, as someone in the text box points out, they base the street cost on bringing it down to the smallest size that will be sold. So say, you know, $10 for a gram of marijuana, then that would be 28 grams per ounce times 16 ounces per pound. That's $4,480 per pound.
All right.
And that's kind of insane.
So that's kind of why I wondered if there was a bulk discount. Because, yeah, if you're figuring that you're just going to, you know, it's like that thing in certain convenience-style stores around town where you can buy a cigarette for a quarter. You know, which I guess if you were to extrapolate that out makes it, I guess, maybe around the same that it is, you know, for a pack or whatever. But, you know, if you buy something in smaller amounts, it's typically going to be more expensive.
All right.
For example, if you were to subscribe to 1 month of the Rick Emerson Show, that'd be $6.99, Don. But if you were subscribed to a year of the Rick Emerson Show, let's say you just realized, I'm not even going to say discover, you just realized because it seems to be, it's empiric. If you were to discover that the Rick Emerson Show, when purchased in bulk, let's say a year subscription at $80, is only $6.66 a month, you'd say to yourself, well, of course, why should I bother just getting this 1 month subscription when I go for the whole year? Now, maybe you say to yourself, you know, I don't know, that the 1 year is great, the 1 month is all right. Right now, I cannot realistically afford either. Then my answer to you is the Rick Emerson Grant, about which we'll be talking more later in the week, and that is with our partners at New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. You can find out more about this at rickemerson.com. They are giving away 10 gift subscriptions per month, 10 one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson radio program. And New Millennium Maintenance, by the way, they does with the cleanification and the abatementizing. They do things around your house and neighborhood and your yard and your lawn that other people don't want to do and that probably you don't want to do, such as nuisance abatement, which I always thought was just sort of like sticking homeless guys, in the back of a van and getting rid of them. But
I was thinking it was like getting rid of rats and mice and stuff. And I thought, well, no, but he cleans carpet, so it wouldn't be rats. And then I figured, oh, that must be like dog pee. And things like that.
I think you're conflating two different businesses, but that's okay.
No.
New Millennium Maintenance, though, they are providing the Rick Emerson Grant, which is 10 one-month subscriptions per month that we are going to be giving away to a series of listeners. So I'll be listening for that, and you can find out more about it at rickemerson.com. Go to rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
I did conflate people. I'm so easily confused.
What you should do is dwell on it endlessly for the rest of the show. No.
No? No? How about we do entertainment news and pretend that never happened?
What happened? There we go. Here's Don Taylor with your entertainment news.
Chad Lowe, ex-husband of Oscar-winning actress Hilary Swank and brother of Rob Lowe, married movie producer Kim Painter Saturday at the Terranea Resort in Los Angeles. Rob Lowe is the best man at the wedding, which also had the couple's 15-month-old daughter Mabel as
ring bearer. Wait, so Chad Lowe and Rob Lowe are related?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that.
I thought everyone knew that.
No. I don't really follow the family tree of Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
Not as closely as some.
Lowe and Swank divorced in 2007, not long after she won the Oscar, because that's what actresses do.
Yeah.
The cast of Dancing with the Stars Season 11 is in place, thus guaranteeing that those of us who have never watched the show will continue to never watch it. Baywatch alum David Hasselhoff will compete against Jersey Shore's Michael the Situation Sorrentino, as well as former NFL star Kurt Warner, singer Michael Bolton, Bristol Palin, and actress Jennifer Grey. Also ready to hit the ballroom are Brady Bunch star Florence Henderson, Audrina Partridge of The Hills, former Los Angeles Laker Rick Fox, singer Brandy, comedian Margaret Cho, and actor Kyle Massey.
This world makes no sense. I mean, I know that the whole point of Dancing with the Stars is that you're getting people that you would not think of as being dancers and that they are trying to get a wide representation, a wide range of humanity in there. But, and I know that everybody's got to pay the rent. Let's have no illusions about that. I know that your brother got to eat. But what the hell, like Margaret Cho? Like what?
Yeah.
What is it? That's...
I don't...
It's not like I think less of her as such. It doesn't really seem like a thing that... Doesn't seem like a thing that's in her wheelhouse, unless she's just eyeing it as future comedic grist, which is always possible. Because she did, I think, two different tours and a book where basically her whole thing was talking about that All-American Girl sitcom and how badly it sucked. Maybe that's her deal. Maybe she's just going to, like, deliberately put herself in awkward show business situations now just so she can get, like, a one-woman show out of it at some point in the future.
This summer saw the release of some beloved films, but that wasn't enough to keep theaters packed, even as studios and theater owners saw record revenues thanks to an average ticket price of $7.88. Attendance fell to its lowest level since 1997, Bloomberg reports. The number of tickets sold this summer is expected to hit 552 million, a drop of 2.6% from 2009. Meanwhile, summer revenue will rise to $4.35 billion, an increase of 2.4%. So, if you're angry about the price you're paying for movies, keep that in mind.
Well, it seems like that average ticket price you're given is kind of a little on the low side as well.
Yeah, I mean, well, it depends on where you are.
Is that one of those things where they're factoring in, like, the matinee price?
Possibly.
To sort of artificially lower it? Because I think, I mean, Jesus, not that it's not worth the money, because it is, but, I mean, it's like you go to Cinetopia, for example. I think Cinetopia was like, I mean, it was like $10.50 or $11 or something, which I might be wrong about that, but I do not believe that I am. Here is Don Taylor.
The Glee cast members are reportedly not satisfied with the royalties they received from Sony Music for the Glee soundtracks that have been released, which have topped over a million combined copies. The New York Post claims the actors have complained about their royalties to Glee creator Ryan Murphy, and although actress Lea Michele is releasing her solo debut through Sony, she's spearheading the goal to get the cast a bigger piece of the show's music profits. I got $400 from Glee, the music, Journey to the Regionals going number one, said Glee actor Corey Monteith to a Washington, D.C. radio station. But you know what? That's okay, because if I'm patient and if this thing does really well, maybe I'll see another $400.
This is exactly how, this is where the cracks in the foundation always begin. This is like as soon as the show starts to win Emmys or it starts to make any amount of money, then previously sort of masked or suppressed anger starts to come out in all the various cast members. And that's where somebody finds out that somebody else on the cast is making slightly more, has a slightly larger trailer. And then they're gone and they're being replaced by Coy and Vance, you know, or whatever.
Miranda Lambert made history Wednesday morning when she was nominated for 9 CMA Awards, the most for a female country music artist. She'll be celebrating with close friends Lady Antebellum and her fiancé Blake Shelton. Lady A earned the second most nominations with 5, and Shelton was next with 4, tied with the Zac Brown Band.
I have no idea who any of these people are.
I thought Miranda Lambert was somebody else. No, I'm thinking of Adam Lambert. All right, never mind. Sorry.
Lambert, Lady A, Zac Brown Band, Brad Paisley. Hey, I know who he is. Keith Urban, know who he is. We're nominated for Entertainment of the Year, the Country Music Association's top award. There's a picture of Miranda Lambert here. She looks like somebody like put her head in a vise and squished her face.
Oh, I know exactly who this is. I think... I believe Miranda Lambert was, Miranda Lambert is one of those things that you don't really realize. It has sort of a shamalama ding dong kind of flow.
Miranda Lambert.
And, na-na-na-na-na.
Miranda Lambert.
Thank you. I believe that she made her initial name on some sort of a country reality show. It was like Nashville Star or one of those things. I think that's kind of where she came from. If it's the person I'm thinking of, I mean, she's not bad. I've heard her single, and it's okay. She does have a... She has an unfortunate face, though. There's a whole lot going on in this face. You know what it is? There's a lot going on in too little space here.
Yeah.
It's like the face itself. She's got the Tila Tequila syndrome, where everything is happening in a surface area that's about 40% of what it needs to be to really make it function properly. And as a result, you kind of look at it for a while before you sort of have to look away. Because then you just, you know.
It's kind of like a human Shar-Pei.
Yeah.
It's like everything just kind of squished toward the center.
Yeah, that's not good. All right.
Bethany Frankel revealed to Us Weekly that she's leaving The Real Housewives of New York. Have you ever seen any of these Real Housewives shows?
I have, but sort of against my will. The last time I was in Provo, visiting my wife's family, and it's one of those houses where, look, don't get me wrong, I like to wallow in American popular culture with the best of, maybe more than the average person, but... Something I don't do is just have the television just sort of, at least at this point in my life, I just don't have the television kind of running in the background all the time. And if I do, it's stuff that I have on the TiVo or stuff that I've, you know, the downloaded or that I've, you know, the DVD or whatever. I don't just like stick it on some random channel when I get up in the morning and just have it sort of like squalling away in the background like some sort of the hideous carbuncle covered siren song, you know, because that's. And if you go to my in-laws' house, what it is it's a combination of Fox News and it's a combination of three things: Fox News, bad reality programming, and judge shows. It just cycles throughout the day because at any given point during the broadcast, period, one of those things is on, and probably all three of them. And so one of the things that my mother-in-law will watch, she'll watch, she'll watch Fox News, and then she'll watch Judge, Judy or whatever. And then she will watch The Housewives of Atlanta, New York, New Jersey, etc. And it's all just on some like sort of horrible infinite loop in the house. And so I have been exposed to that for many, many, many more minutes than I ever would have planned.
I've never seen any of these shows because they just seem like, just from the way they advertise them, they are programs about just vile, unpleasant people. So I just don't understand why I would want to.
It's just as bad as you can imagine and probably worse.
Well, Bethany Frankel says that last season was scary and painful, and it took all the joy out of it. Her spinoff program, Bethany Getting Married, it has a question mark, premiered on Bravo June 10th, and its first episode was seen by over 2 million viewers. A Bravo source claims Frankel is contractually bound to make appearances on the upcoming season of Housewives, and the network is still hoping she will return to the program on a full-time basis.
This is my assessment. This is the one that the one that was on the most often was The Real Housewives of Atlanta, and it was sort of like, it was like they took all of, it was like they took all of the most horrific and contentious moments from, I don't know, like the first 5 seasons of The Real World and the first 3 seasons of Survivor, and then just distilled them down and said, let's just make a show out of those moments right there. I mean, that's sort of the way it seemed. Mm. It was like when, it's like when General Mills decided to make an all Crunchberry cereal. Because they say, well, kids really like these Crunch Berries. Why don't we just make an entire box of that, and then we'll put it on the shelves. They'll buy anything. And that's what they did with this. So, there would be that moment on every season of The Real World where somebody, usually a guy, and somebody else, usually a woman, will get in some huge fight, and it would end up with somebody punching somebody else in the face and being dragged down a hallway, and then a lot of teary-eyed speaking to the camera about, well, I just came here thinking it was going to be a lot of fun, and now I'm sorry, I'm having to. Meanwhile, a mellow Green Day song is playing on the soundtrack, and you're feeling, sort of just, poignant and bittersweet about the whole thing. That's what that show seems to be, but just sort of writ large over the course of an hour. It's you can just feel your brain just turning into Farina while you watch it. I mean, it's bad. All right. Well, in any event, hey, if you're listening to this entertainment news and being amused, if you're chortling, perhaps guffawing, and perhaps having a good out loud chuckle to yourself, you can thank folks such as Michael Beatty. He is the owner and proprietor and operator and mastermind and maven of The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211 is how you get a hold of him. 971-533-3211. Stain removal, carpet repairs, and he'll work on upholstery, stone, marble, tile, anything like that. And you actually mentioned the stains from an animal or whatever, if you're a pet. And he has 4 dogs himself, so he knows that pain. Of where you turn your back for here's the thing about it, it doesn't really seem to matter sometimes whether you've just taken the dog outside or not. Like, there are times when you have, for lack of a better description, emptied the dog to the best of your knowledge, right? Like, the dog doesn't even seem, it seems like he would have to have, like, cows have a second stomach or a ninth stomach or whatever. It's like the dog has a secret bladder that he's got hidden somewhere just for the purposes of, like, messing up your stuff. You know what I mean? Are you all done? You're fine? Okay, we've been out here walking in the freezing ass cold for, like, 3 hours. You're sure that you've eliminated all of your waste? Yeah, I'm fine. And then you go on, and you just duck in to make yourself a sandwich, and you come out, and there's a big puddle in the middle of the floor, and the dog is just sitting there thumbing through TV Guide like nothing happened. So, and you know what I'm talking about. Possibly you don't, but it doesn't really matter. The point is, you can get a hold of Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution at 971-533-3211, and once that carpet is clean, he can actually help keep it looking clean as well. And that's not just at your home, that's at your office, your place of business as well. 971-533-3211. This is Don Taylor.
The owner of Wake and Bake Coffee on the corner of Southeast 45th and Johnson Creek Road in Portland.
Are we still in entertainment news?
Oh, no, we're not.
All right.
Sorry.
That's okay. Here's Don Taylor.
Yes.
The owner of Wake and Bake Coffee on the corner of Southeast 45th and Johnson Creek Road is breathing a sigh of relief following an investigation by a local news program. Portland City Code enforcers say they have no intention of shutting her down. Melissa Brake purchased the small one-room drive-through espresso business nearly 7 years ago. Since then, her business has grown, and perhaps that's why she's generated at least one complaint from someone in the area. The complaint resulted in an inquiry by the Portland Bureau of Development Services Code Enforcement Branch. Whew. Which found she was not in compliance with city code. The problem was she was too close to two local streets where customers drive up and wait in line to be served. If she has more than two customers in line, they back onto a local public street, and that can block local residents from getting to Southeast 45th. So apparently, though, she got local KGW News involved, and they came to her aid, and they talked to the code enforcement guys. And so
was she in violation of the law?
Well,
is this yet another story where somebody is sitting behind a table selling something, breaking the law, and then we just decide not to enforce it? I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just asking.
Well, this is where it gets interesting. She was warned in 2003 about the violation. She hadn't dealt with it, so she could be in big trouble. But when she like got the news guys uh-huh. involved in it, and the news guys went to the code violation person, the code violation guy said, "I've never seen that before. That's the first time I've ever seen it." So that must have been a problem with the previous owner. So
there was just something that fell through the cracks
yes.
somewhere. All right. As long as it's not another story about, you know, how sexy is too sexy when it comes to your barista, you know, and then they cut to some chick with big cakes in a bikini, like leaning out and serving a guy a latte or whatever
that's
in his car.
That's too sexy.
Which is a story that happens like about every 65 days.
I can say right now that is too sexy when it comes to my barista.
Let's do one more here and then we will bring the curtain down on this. Don't forget the Rick Emerson program comes your way at 1 p.m. That is just a few short minutes from now, actually. It's about, about 1:10 or so. We'll have one more. We've got Mr. Aaron Mesh coming our way today. Mr. Aaron Mesh will be in the studio from Willamette Week. We will also have another top five and so forth. This is Dawn Taylor.
If you are someone who uses public transportation, keep in mind that bus and MEX fares go up today, along with cuts in service. TriMet is asking voters to approve a $125 million bond measure in November. And apparently until then, they're kind of holding us hostage a little bit. They voted last March to make moves to increase the fares, citing the effects of the recession and declining payroll tax revenues. The service cuts were proposed last January and made final after a series of hearings. The cost of an adult all-zone ticket now goes from $2.30 to $2.35. So
Jesus.
You need another nickel. And a monthly pass from $86 to $88. Youth and student fares remain the same. Honored citizen tickets, I guess that's for old folks, go from 95 cents to $1 for all zone tickets and $25 to $26 for a monthly pass. The agency is promoting their bond measure to replace their older buses with ones better equipped to serve aging boomers, they said. So I don't know what that means. Squishier seats?
I was going to say, by aging, they mean fat. That's just, there's just no getting around that.
Wider people.
All right,
I don't know.
And with that, we bring the curtain down on this episode. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Ackler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.